Welcome to MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome Jörg Heinemann to the broadcast. Jörg is the Chief Information Officer of SunPower Corporation, a vertically integrated solar products and services company that designs, manufactures, and markets high-performance solar electric power technologies. Jörg leads global information technology, shared services, and downstream software services organizations. He drives the company's strategic business process transformation initiatives and software innovation for business and customer platforms. Prior to joining SunPower, Jörg was an executive partner at Accenture, a global management consulting, technology services, and outsourcing company. During his 20-year tenure, Jörg was responsible for Accenture's global business relationships with HP and the clean tech and sustainability practice for Accenture's communications and high technology division. He was instrumental in driving large-scale change programs for prominent high-tech companies such as Apple, Autodesk, Cadence, Hitachi Data Systems, Intuit, Sun Microsystems, and Toshiba. Jörg has a Bachelor's of Science degree in Electrical Engineering from the University of California, Los Angeles. I recently spoke with Jörg in his office in San Jose, California, and our conversation covered World-Class IT Principle 1, People, as we discussed the skills necessary to support SunPower's dramatic growth, Principle 3, Project and Portfolio Management, as we discussed how Jörg governs SunPower's IT function. Principle 4, IT and Business Partnerships, as we spoke about his relationship with a very technically savvy business community within his company. And Principle 5, External Partnerships, as we discussed Jörg's perspective, having been on both sides of the outsourcing divide. Jörg Heinemann, welcome to the Forum on World-Class IT.
Great to be here, Peter.
Jörg, could you begin by describing SunPower's business and your role in the business?
Sure, you bet. SunPower is one of the top solar companies. We're on a run rate to be about $2 billion in revenue by the end of 2010, about 5,000 employees globally. And we actually have a 25-year track record in the solar business, so we've got the most experience. We manufacture the highest efficiency solar cells and modules, and then we install those at the high end on utility scale power plants. About a third of our business is large scale commercial rooftops, and about a third of our business is direct to residential customers. We do that through a channel of about 1,000 dealers globally. As I mentioned, we have the highest efficiency solar cells, so our cells are about 50% more efficient than conventional technology and about four times as efficient as thin film technology. And what that does is it allows us to generate more electricity, so more watts per square foot than any other company out there, which makes us a tremendous return, particularly for space-constrained applications. As far as my role goes, I met my boss. I actually spent 20 years with Accenture. I was a partner in our high-tech practice, and Tom Werner, our CEO, and I both represented Silicon Valley Leadership Group, represented our companies at Silicon Valley Leadership Group. And so I got to know him, and my intent, quite candidly, was to sell him some consulting work. We got into discussions, and he started trying to sell me on a job, which at the time was a pretty narrow IT job and frankly not that interesting. But as the conversations progressed, it turned out he was a far more effective salesman than I was, and he convinced me to take on a role, and it's pretty interesting. So I've got IT, traditional IT responsibility, all the usual IT operations as well as business systems, and then I'm also responsible for our back office shared services operation. That includes all the back office finance process folks, the back office HR, back office call center folks to do customer support, tech support, dealer support, as well as our overall process transformation initiatives, and then our core strategic software assets. So it's a pretty broad role, and frankly, based on my prior life, it's really exciting because we've got the technology, the people actually doing the work, and the process change under one roof. So it's a lot of fun.
That's excellent. And gosh, it occurs to me as you describe both the company as well as your role that both seem very strategic in nature. Can you talk a little bit about how you get into the strategic knitting of the business, how you impact that?
You bet. And I'll start by talking about a couple of the trends that are facing the solar industry right now. It's a really interesting business. We're currently in a heavily supply-constrained world. And then if you look back in time, back in 2009, we were demand-constrained for some time, and then you reverse back in history some more, it was heavily supply-constrained. So we're on this shift between supply-constrained, and I mean dramatically so, shifting to demand constraint, which is, you know, pretty much how every other industry operates. So we were on a mission to make sure that we can serve our customers well, that we have effective sales processes, that we're effective at meeting our customers' needs, as opposed to just being order takers who can function in a supply-constrained world. So that's one trend. The other trend that's hitting us is moving from essentially only what used to be only residential and commercial rooftops to a utility power plant business. And that's a fundamental shift. So the world in which we are building solar photoelectric power plants for our customers is a fundamentally different set of requirements than putting, say, you know, PV up on my rooftop, and requires far more industrial strength thinking, far more rigorous operations and maintenance. So those two things force us to think and behave differently. And what underscores it all is my background came largely from the high-tech world, where, quite candidly, if you look at our financial statements, you'll see the gross margins in the solar world are not nearly what the high-tech world is. As a result, we have to be absolutely leading class in our processes and how we operate internally, in addition to having the world's leading product. So fast forward into the IT world, and that means that you know, not only do we have to operate effectively, but we've got to be leading class at all of our core processes. We have to use technology, and we've got a couple of key assets. One is in the engineer-to-order arena. The other is in the operations and monitoring arena, where we have technology that's proprietary to the solar industry. We use that instead of, instead of using excess manual labor, if you will, so that we can create a competitive differentiation relative to our competitors. So those are a couple of things we're doing. I'd be glad to go deeper if you like.
I would like to. Actually, it strikes me as you describe this. Clearly, of course, this is an industry that is changing considerably, where demand is increasing considerably. But it also seems like SunPower is a player in that industry that is doing particularly well and has quite a growth projections in a quite a positive direction for the foreseeable future. As you contemplate that growth, I would imagine this leads to some challenges from a of the perspective of structure, focus, ensuring that you're able to deliver all the business demands of you. You've talked about some of the process excellence you put in place. I wonder if you could kind of take us a couple of layers deeper as to how you've sorted through that to make sure that IT is well equipped to support the business as it pushes forward with that growth plan.
Yeah, and maybe I'll handle that through a couple of stories. So when I came on board, we had just gone live with an enterprise-wide implementation of a common ERP package, one of the two major packages that are out there. And frankly, this was a case study in what happens if a company tries to do a big ERP implementation, staffs it largely with external consultants who are very deep in the software product, but not necessarily as deep in the business processes, and then combine that with a very rapidly growing company, candidly, where most of the employees had never operated in a, you know, multi-billion-dollar company, know what industrial strength processes look like. And what we ended up with was a highly configured, highly customized version of a new set of software that really replicated how things used to work in the old world. And it wasn't very effective. So what we've done since, you know, since looking forward, is we've taken a step back. We've organized by business process area. So by business process, think market to order, order to cash, forecast to delivery, et cetera. Have actively worked with the business stakeholders, so they're not on the outside of the team looking in, but they're part of the team defining the new business processes. Then we have a roadmap for each of those areas, where we're systematically attacking. In some cases, it's continuous improvement because the software is working reasonably well. In many cases, though, it's rethinking the process, taking a look at how other leading companies in similar industries perform those tasks, defining the processes, mapping it to the software, and then implementing it. And we're about, I'd say about halfway through that journey, probably 1 year into a two-year journey approximately. And for us, there are some areas that are pretty straightforward. So our financial operations, for example, are very similar to any other companies. Procure-to-pay is very similar. But if we look, for instance, at how we do project management and construction management, those are areas that are uniquely differentiating for us, because under the covers, if we're going to be successful in the utility and power plant market or the large-scale commercial rooftop market, we need to behave like a large-scale construction company. On the other hand, on the supply chain side, if we look at our cell and module manufacturing, we look a lot like a semiconductor manufacturer, and there are leading practices to be drawn upon from the leading semiconductor companies in the world. So we're pulling kind of a fundamental process transformation, and then fortunately we have a very strong leadership team that's come on board over the last few years, many of whom have deep experience in leading companies in those areas I just described.
That's great. You described also this transformation from what was a not necessarily so advanced or sophisticated an IT function to one that is much more so under your guidance. I'm wondering, of the team that you took over and considering the transformation that you have undertaken, what sorts of skills have become more important among the people on your team? Do you find that there are certain aspects of what they do that have increased in importance and others that have decreased in importance?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it's probably helpful to look at SunPower's history. We're 25 years old, but mm-hmm. if you rewind 7 years, we were at approximately $50 million in total revenue 7 years ago, and now we're on a path to $2 billion. So you can imagine the growth we've seen over the last several years. When I came on board close to 2 years ago, the IT team was basically the team that had grown up with the place from $50 million in revenue approximately. And the type of skills that are required to operate in a super nimble startup are just fundamentally different from what it takes to run a billion-dollar company or a $5 billion company. What we had was a very talented, highly energetic crew that was more or less running around from fire to fire, putting out, with the fire extinguisher, putting out the flames. And frankly, that was what the doctor ordered when this place was small and growing rapidly. What we need now, though, looking ahead and what we have in place, is a team that can think in a very disciplined way, that can plan ahead, that can take a disciplined approach to problem solving by looking at the trends, using metrics, do a Pareto of the problems we see, attack the highest priority or biggest impact problems with a specific action plan, drive those root causes to the ground, then go pick the next ones, keep measuring it. It's a far more structured way of operating. And frankly, that suits a different kind of person. So it's been a combination of some of the folks who grew up with the place are still here and driving. Others have decided that it's probably not as good a fit. And we've had to infuse some leadership from folks, frankly, who have seen the movie, who know what it's like to run a world-class IT operation in a multi-billion-dollar company.
Part of the transformation, surely, is also you've mentioned in this conversation and elsewhere the need to align with the business and to demonstrate the value of what it is that you're putting together from an IT perspective, from the portfolio that you're investing in. How have you gone about building the sorts of skills and ensuring that you have traditional ROIs and speaking the business's language to demonstrate the value that IT is leading on their behalf?
Yeah, we're doing that in a couple ways, and this is, again, keeping in mind the high growth trajectory that we're on. There are two structural mechanisms, and then I'll talk about the team roles in a minute. The first structural mechanism is something we refer to as the IT stage gate process, and this is actually something that I inherited, I'd like to say improved upon, but it's a rigorous set of checkpoints along the development life cycle, so think initial business case, then design, deployment, et cetera, where we do a checkpoint with the key business stakeholders, the key IT stakeholders, and then other interested parties, such as finance, for example, and internal controls. And we review the project at each of those gates. And for example, the first gate is something we call Stage Gate 1. We don't exit that gate unless A, there's a business executive in the room who's sponsoring the project, B, he's got agreed upon funding, and C, we've identified exactly how we're going to measure the business benefits of the project. And by exactly how, he needs to be able to point back to either the P&L, so shareholder impact, or the executive dashboard metric that will be favorably affected by that project. That's one mechanism. Second mechanism is a top-down business IT steering committee that we do as part of our quarterly ops review cycle. It consists of approximately half of the executive staff members, and we use that opportunity, we do it once a quarter, to review at a top-down level the overall priorities of where we're investing, whether it's in IT infrastructure or in the IT business apps, to make sure that we're not disproportionately favoring one business area over another just based on who screams the loudest or who happens to have the most available funds in their budget. So that's the second structural mechanism. And then the third area, and this gets more to skills and staffing and roles, is one of the things we found 2 years ago coming on board is that we were relatively strong on the IT technical skills, but we really needed to strengthen the IT leadership. And then above all, we were almost utterly lacking strong project management and business analysis skills. So I mentioned the ERP implementation that we struggled with. One of the major root causes was just simply not having people who are very good at driving the process change and driving the project forward and working with the business. And my belief on that is the right type of person is someone who has demonstrated the ability to lead projects and could have a career path equally effectively on the business side as on the IT side. And so we set about doing that, and we actually now have a pretty strong team. If you look at any business area, we've got folks, in most cases, every single one of them has hopped back and forth over the course of their career. For their next role, they're as likely to be back in a business role as they are within an IT role. It's one way to think of it. We're probably different from a typical larger company. Most of the big companies I've worked with over my career typically have a business project manager or business project lead paired up with an IT project lead for a given initiative. We frankly can't afford that. We need to operate much more leanly. So we've got one role, and in most cases that happens to be an IT badge person, but they speak, think, and behave in business terms, and their career path is equally sound on the business side as it is on the IT side.
That's fantastic, and it occurs to me that as you describe that, there's a much more of an ability to walk in the other's shoes if, in fact, they have literally done so somewhere in their career, this sort of switching back and forth between IT and business career path.
It sure is. Yeah, and what it's done and created is a and I'm really proud of this, and it's one of the things I'm committed to continuing. We have essentially zero shadow IT as a result of this. So anything that's IT related spend, it comes through me. Even better, I don't believe, knock on wood here and go out a limb, I don't believe that's viewed as a problem across the organization versus many companies I've been at. As CIOs struggle to get their arms around the IT spend, there's all kinds of little pockets of IT folks living within the business trying to hide from the mother IT organization. And anytime that corporate wants to do something that's viewed as a problem, I think we've got this aligned. And the reason we have it, the key to that success, is these business analysts, program leads, who are thinking and operating like business people, not like technologists.
That's excellent. You, as you've mentioned earlier, Jorg, are a former consultant, a former leader at Accenture. Now, of course, you are a user of consulting services and therefore on the other side of the table being sold to, just as you once attempted to the CEO of your business. I wonder what have you taken from the experiences of having been on the other side of the table now to govern the relationships that you are managing, you and your team are managing on SunPower's behalf?
Yeah, I tell you, it's been absolutely fascinating, and I frankly wasn't quite sure what to expect. I still remember my first one-on-one with Tom when he sat me down. We were discussing the role now that I was on board. He was asking me questions like, because he was looking at me like a consultant, are you sure you really know how to do anything besides just tell people what to do? And he'd ask me questions like, Do you know how to run a staff meeting? Tom, I think I'll be okay. So in fairness, I felt really well prepared because the nice thing about, especially the kind of consulting I was doing, which was largely leading large-scale business transformation projects, ERP projects, CRM projects, et cetera, pretty much, at least one of everything I've encountered here and then some, as well as large-scale business process outsourcing projects. So I'd seen all the different flavors, and I've seen it in a bunch of different ways. I've come in the door, I felt like I'd seen the movie. What surprised me, though, was it's different being on the other side of the fence. And we've had a variety of service providers here. We use outsourcing pretty heavily. We use external resources pretty heavily at SunPower. And I tell you, in the 2 years I've been here, I've seen everything from the boy, I hope I was never half that bad. I can't believe we're paying this person and they're no longer here. Boy, these guys are good. I hope I was half that good on my best day. So I've seen the range, and certainly if I were to go back into the consulting world, which I'm not intending to do, I would have some very valuable lessons in knowing what it's like to be in my chair is frankly different than I thought it was when I was on the other side, and I thought I was pretty darn good at understanding my clients' needs, expectations, and desires. The other perspective that's running true, and this is something I did bring over from my consulting days, is the way we engage with external service providers, whether it's on the long-term outsourcing side or on the short-term contract side. I believe in two things as fundamental drivers of success in a relationship, and it's very different from the traditional set-up service level agreements with penalties and earn backs and a big, super in-depth contract that spells out those SLAs and those earn backs and those penalties in great detail. I believe two things really matter. One is having a mutual incentive structure to where my incentives are aligned with the business's incentives, which are aligned with the service provider's incentives that are supporting us, and I'm going to explain what that means in a minute in more detail. And the other is having low switching costs. Those are the two fundamentals. So by mutual incentives, there's four principles. One is that everybody's goals are aligned. So a service provider we have, their bonus the same way that I'm bonus, which is the same way that the other business stakeholders are bonus, and the same thing cascades down through the team. We've got some mechanisms here at SunPower with the way we manage by objective that makes that easier to do. But basically, give everyone the same goal, make sure bonuses are aligned on the same goal. A lot easier to get the adjustments we need mid-project than any other mechanism. That's one. Second is that there be a bonus, or in the case of a services provider, an amount of fees at risk that's aligned with the outcome, and it's aligned with that service provider's ability to affect the outcome. So roughly proportional, and the percentage is going to vary, frankly, depending on the type of services contract. A few percentage points can be the difference between profit and not making money. So you can dial that right, and it can have a tremendous effect. Third is that whatever metrics we use are simple and easy to measure. And then fourth, there'd be some kind of balance between risk and reward, meaning if I'm going to ask a service provider to put bonus money on, put fees at risk, they also have to be able to earn more if they over-deliver, get a little bit of upside in there. As you can imagine, those are interesting points for discussion in any contract negotiation, but they tend to work out better, be more productive, and lead to healthier outcomes and healthier relationship than the old traditional SLA discussions. The other piece of this is low switching costs, and any kind of significant engagement with a service provider, there's a big switching cost for us. So if we take the company that's today performing our application support for ERP, for example, and we decide we don't like them anymore, we wanted to switch to somebody else, we would incur a pretty heavy time and energy investment, opportunity cost investment that we would have to make. So that's a pretty heavy switching cost for us right off the bat. And the same would be true on the other side, on the service provider side. So therefore, what I'm doing is saying that's it. We're not, we're not buying into penalty clauses or additional financial penalties beyond that switching cost that we're already going to incur. And I'm a believer that the low switching cost threshold coupled with mutual incentives creates a healthier dynamic between us and our providers than any other complicated you know, 100-page contract mechanism could around SLAs, penalties, and earnbacks.
That makes great sense, Jorg. I appreciate you running through that. Out of curiosity, I don't know if these are percentages you have at top of mind, but even sort of with broad brushstrokes in mind, as you think about having put this incentive structure in place whereby there's a certain percentage of fees at risk as well as the ability to go beyond the potential fee structure for over-delivery, do you have a general sense in mind as to the percentage of your partners who do end up having to pay some of those fees back or never earn them in the first place versus those that earn exactly as indicated versus those that overperform? Is it roughly a bell curve that's that you can put to that?
Well, in probably there's a couple ways to come at that. So one is what are the percentages, and
yep.
Generally speaking, companies that are doing high value consulting work can command. So think like the McKinseys of the world or the Booz Allens that come in and do strategy type consulting. They tend to have much higher gross margins. So it takes a bigger percentage to make a difference to them, and therefore to us, than say a long-term outsourcing contract company would, where their gross margins are far leaner. Instead of being in the 50s, they might be in the 20s. So even a few percentage points can make a big difference to their economics, as we can get a nice tight contract that makes a lot of sense with a lower percentage swing. But frankly, what I found is, When this kind of contract is set up properly, we end up paying the bonus most of the time. So I'd say two-thirds to three-quarters of the time we'll end up paying the bonus. And frankly, we'll do that happily, because if we're paying the bonus to our provider, it means that the reason we're doing this is because the project was successful, which means that internally we've achieved our business objectives and the rest of the team is getting their bonus as well. So that tends to work out well. There is a percentage of the time where it doesn't, but it's far less than the traditional situation where you get into a service provider who's happy because they're managing exactly to their service level agreement. And most of those providers are sophisticated enough to have baked in the penalties into their economics. So although it looks on the surface like there's a heavy financial incentive for them to perform to the SLA, in reality, they define their baseline so they can make money even if they're completely in penalty mode. The structure we've got, and by the way, the structure, this is not unique to SunPower. We do this in my prior life. I did this as a service provider, and it worked great. It created a win-win atmosphere instead of an adversarial one in most cases.
That makes great sense. No, again, thank you for running through that. I think it's such a such a clever way to set up the contracts for that win-win as you described. Last question for you, Jorg, as somebody who's been in the thick of technology in a variety of realms, again, both as a leader of a consultancy as well as now as the chief information officer of a major high-growth organization, I wonder what new technologies particularly excite you as you look into your crystal ball. Are there some trends that you're looking at that you believe might lead to investments on your company's behalf or for you personally? What excites you as you think forward technologically speaking?
There are, and in some ways it's perfect timing. I mean, we're probably a poster child for a company that should be adopting cloud-based computing and software as a service computing for starters, because we've grown up so fast. Our infrastructure is going from startup mode to multi-billion dollar mode. And if I took you the tour of our data server rooms, I won't say today, but say 6 or 12 months ago, we had some rather humorous instances where we had water running next to server racks and that kind of thing. And our director of IT operations noticed it because he saw water leaking out from under a door, and we found that it was because an air conditioner unit had cracked and was leaking, and it got literally within 3 feet of the racks. That's not a very good situation if you're a data center guy. And it's just an example of, hey, we should not be in the data center business when there are so many companies out there that can either host our environment on a colo basis or take us up as a cloud type offering. A lot of the concerns around security, et cetera, are things where I'm absolutely confident that a strong, effective service provider should be able to provide a more secure, more available environment than we ever could ourselves, at least than we ever could ourselves at an effective price point. So we're a perfect early adopter of those. We're leveraging Salesforce.com very effectively for our front-end sales and CRM processes. And generally speaking, our preferred solution on anything, if we can get it into the cloud, if we can get it as software as a service, that's where we're going first. Putting something else on-premise is a, you know, a distant second in our mind. And it's nice that we don't have a lot of the legacy or incumbent challenges of, gee, what do I do with this environment I've had for 10 years that a lot of the more established companies have. We can go straight into the cloud. So that's one trend. The other trend is kind of a counter trend. We're really focused on getting the fundamentals right, getting achieving process excellence with our existing business processes, making the most of the investments we've already made in ERP and CRM and the other tools we have, as opposed to trying to add new bells and whistles on top of those. That said, though, there are two specific areas where we're excited about what technology can do for us and for the solar industry, and those are those assets I alluded to previously. One is a proprietary suite of engineer-to-order tools. So these are tools that, particularly for commercial environments, allow our designers to design solar systems and simulate those, and then convert the designs into a bill of material and automatically feed it into our ERP system. Now, that may sound trivial, or at least not that sophisticated, until you look under the covers of the economics of the solar rooftop power plant. And typically, the business cases can vary widely. A couple percentage points of efficiency, or a couple or a little bit of shading, can turn a business case from very strong to very weak, and therefore it's, or vice versa, right? It can take what looks like it's something that's dead on arrival, increase the efficiency of the cells, increase the electricity output over the course of a day, prove that out, and it can take a business case in the, from the terrible range to great. And by the way, we SunPower stand behind, particularly for commercial and utility deals, most of those are on a power purchase agreement type basis where we commit to the power output over the life of the system. So we have to be very, very good about being able to measure, simulate, and predict the electricity output over the life of that system. And so we have a set of tools no one else has that allows us to do that. And then we're in the process of taken, and by the way, so there's kind of, there's an efficiency play there in terms of, yes, it's easier to automate the design process than to do it with manual tools, but most importantly, the business impact of doing it accurately has a huge return for us. So it's a big investment we're continuing to make. The other is on the back end of the process in terms of operating and maintaining those systems. We've got a number of investments that we're making at strengthening our ability to essentially run power plants at the high end. And then at the residential end, for the end consumer, we've got tools that allow our customers, for example, to look on their iPhone and see their real-time power production of their own residential system, compare it to the energy consumption within the home. It's kind of a, you know, fun cocktail kind of thing. It's also fun for our dealers. They can go look at the sites for that they've installed and then proactively intervene. If they see anything happening, and go perform preventative maintenance if necessary.
That's great. Great examples all the way around. Well, Jörg Heinemann, thank you so much for joining us on the Forum on World Class IT and sharing your perspectives. It's been a great conversation.
Thanks very much.
Just listen to a podcast in a series we call Meta Strategies Forum on World Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please consider reading my book, World Class IT, Why Businesses Succeed When IT Triumphs, published by Josie Bass, a division of Wiley Press, in December of 2009. Both the book and the Forum on World Class IT offer stories from a wide range of top IT leaders relating to Meta Strategies' five principles of World Class IT. The five principles are as follows. Principle one is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it will be nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure, defined as software, hardware, networks. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will likely become stuck in a reactive mode, constantly fighting fires. And if systems and hardware work reliably, on the other hand, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It's important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important that, first and foremost, the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and quality assurance, through to support and all other aspects of the IT department, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important, then, that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business. Now, if the three prior principles are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy-setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming crucial to corporations, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information on these five principles and the sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metisstrategy.com, and please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metisstrategy.com. Our sound editor is Chris Davis, our web editor is Christian Dooley, and our theme music was written by David Armin. I'm Peter High. Thanks for listening.